Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Klarfeld with Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian books, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, my guest is Martin Wilson, author of What They'll Always Say. It's won super awards. It's a great book. I finished reading it in like one day, and I've been raving about it. Martin, welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, first question. I'm sure you get asked this all the time. By the way, Martin's book is a young adult novel about two brothers and high school kids who are going through a year of loyalty, and loyalty's broken, loyalty's made, and coming out, of course. That's why we're here on Gay and Lesbian Radio. Okay, Martin, here's the question. How much of this book is autobiographical?
I knew it. And I'm ready to answer. But first of all, I want to say I have one of those titles. My book has a title that's easily jumbled, and it's What They Always Tell Us. I think a million people get it wrong. I think you said what they always say.
I'm sorry.
You're not the first one to get it wrong, so I just wanted to correct that.
The book right in front of me. Okay.
But anyway, so how much is autobiographical? My ready-made answer is that anything I think a fiction writer writes is emotionally autobiographical. I would say a lot of this book is emotionally autobiographical. Factually, it's not really autobiographical. I do have a brother. I draw on my relationship with my brother, and I drew on my relationship with my brother writing this novel. I did grow up in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Many of the places and things and are, you know, based on, you know, stuff when I was growing up. But, you know, the fun part of being a writer is making things up, and, you know, it's mostly, you know, made up story. And I can tell you that I did not swallow Pine Sol like Alex does. So I don't know if that's a satisfying answer, but there it is.
Well, I didn't know which brother you – well, of course, I knew which brother you – but, you know, sometimes people switch the brothers. I've done these interviews, and I've – the most fascinating interview I did was the author of Latter Days, and I didn't realize that he's both people, and that's what his psychiatrist made him do, is write a story. Yeah, he was the party boy and the – so I thought maybe you could be both people, you know. And
well, you know, I sort of am. I think I have a little bit of you know, both of me and the brothers, you know, different ways, and they're both different from how I am in real life. So, you know, that's the fun part. So I think I am, you know, there's a little me in Alex and a little of me in James.
Or you could be the nerdy kid, Henry. We love
him. I could be him too.
Henry was a little boy that lived across the street. I'm not going to give away any plot.
Or the tramp Alice.
The tramp Alice. Okay, we've got a tramp. We've got a little nerd across the street. Great. I mean, we're doing fine on this thing. I wanted to also thank you for making – my name is Nathan, spelled a little differently than your – the hot lover boy in the book, I can give that away, is named Nathan after me, I'm sure, because, you know, I'm tall, dark, and handsome. So I was so excited.
Exactly. I just had to change it a little bit.
Right. I just never – that's right, so that people wouldn't know it was me. I was so excited. You never see my name associated with a romantic lead. I mean, come on. That's
I didn't know you were half Indian, though.
I'm actually part Burmese.
Oh, okay. Wow.
In real life, yeah. I just found that out recently. I had my DNA run because I was the wrong color compared to half my family looks like, you know, tall, very dark hair, 6'1", dark, a little dark around the eyes. Very, 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 you know, black, blue-black hair, and the rest of the men look like Woody Allen. So, seriously, so we found out that there's some Burmese. No one admitted to which grandmother, you know, was what, but we do know that it's on the female side. It's kind of wild. All right, we're going to get back to your book, which I thought was hilarious. I started reading your blog. We scheduled this interview about 2 or 3 months ago. And we mentioned Henry, the nerdy kid across the street who reads the dictionary. And now Henry has a life of his own on your blog. Tell us about that.
Well, he did, yes. I recently stopped doing that, unfortunately. I might pick it back up again, but when I published the book, I had a feature on my website and blog called Henry's Word of the Week, because he was obsessed with reading the dictionary, and every week I would sort of introduce a new word and weave it into a short little story about Henry, sort of a continuation of his life after he left Tuscaloosa. I actually haven't done it in a while. It just got a little too overwhelming, but, you know, I could go back to it. It was a fun feature. It was fun to do.
Yeah, I enjoyed
it. So I'm
glad
someone out there was reading it.
But do you know who reads your blog? Do you get much feedback on or emails or letters from teens or teachers that have responded to your book? Because I do have a response to your book after you tell me this.
I do get a decent. I mean, it's not like I'm, you know, getting inundated with emails every day, but I do, you know, people can reach me through my website, and I get emails here and there.
Oh, you're fading away a little. One of my
teens, and sometimes it's young girls, and sometimes it's young teenage boys, and sometimes they write a few lines. I really liked your book. Sometimes they write, you know, paragraphs and paragraphs.
Right.
About, you know, sometimes they talk about their lives, and it's really, you know, really touching and wonderful. It's one of the best parts of writing for teens. Even if I don't hear from thousands of teens, even
right.
Hearing from five is great, you know.
Five.
So, yeah,
five.
I do. I mean, it's more than that, but it's, you know, yeah. It's not as frequent anymore, but it's, I still do hear from teens, and that's fantastic.
No, that's great. You know, it's just one, really, I'm sure your story is similar to mine. I'm a little older than you, but, you know, when you're in high school, you just feel so alone. Like there's no, especially if you're in a school where you think you're the only gay person. And if you
mm-hmm.
can go into a library or a teacher can hand you a book or recommend a book, or you can get on the internet and find a good source, an easy, clean book like this to read. And the book is very, very emotional. I mean, it's an incredibly emotional book, and that's what kids are emotional anyway. So they do have. So if you just have one person that you've touched, it's worth all the, you know, it's worth all the work. You know, it really is. So,
it really is. It sounds, you know, cheesy to say it, but it does make it, you know, it does make it very gratifying to know that people do actually read it, and it does make a difference to some people.
Oh yeah, right. Do you get any feedback on your blog? I know I've got I have blogs and stuff, and I get feedback on how many hits it gets from, you know, Android phones, smartphones, public libraries, stuff like that. Does your blog give you that information, or I don't know if it's that sophisticated?
I do work with a woman who has a company, and she does manages my site. I've never asked those numbers. I wonder if I want to know.
Oh,
I don't know if I want to be depressed, but
okay.
You know, I'm still building an audience, and it's
right.
There, and I enjoy blogging. You know, I'm not a daily blogger. I just, you know, I have a day job as well, so it's hard
right.
to keep that up. And I like to kind of write long, meaty blog posts every now and then, and you just can't generate that every day, or I can't anyway. But I don't really know how many, you know, people look at my blog, but I have a core amount of followers and people who comment and
uh-huh.
who comment on things I post on Facebook. So,
right, I've seen them. I've been part of that. I wanted to. I've got the quote in front of me and the book in front of me, and I still misquoted the title. I'm real. I feel terrible.
No, you're not the only one. Believe me, it's one of those titles that I love the title, but. It's,
right.
I've had people say it wrong a million times, so I didn't want you to feel bad by.
Okay, but it's all right. I'm over.
What they always tell me, what they might say, I don't, you know,
right.
It's one of those titles that can be easily.
Well, you know, I've got it sitting. Reichen Lemkill's book. Here's what we'll say is in. You know, it's kind of funny because I did his interview a few weeks ago, and I called his book What They Always Tell Us, and he was like,
Oh, really?
Yeah. Maybe I'm getting too old or something, but anyway.
Maybe the first time I'll ever be mixed up with Reichen Lemkill.
You know, we've both probably been in worse company. Anyway, actually, his book is going back into print again, kind of like not because of his bad experience on Logo's channel, but because all the gay biographies seem to be doing well all of a sudden. They've put. From the publishers I've heard, Greg Louganis' book, which was out of print, is now back in print. Pallone's
good
book.
Good to hear.
Pallone's book, Behind the Mask, which you have to find like in second bins, that David Pallone, the major league umpire that came out of the closet. His was one of the very, very first books. So I think there has been a resurgence of looking for someone like you in all sorts of things. Here's the quote, by the way, that Henry, I think it's Henry and Alex say, sticks and stones may break your bones, but words can never hurt you. Yeah, that's what they always tell us. A lot of what they tell us is garbage. I just love that. I wrote that down a little index card while I was writing the book, and that's been my bookmark for the whole book. So it really is great. It's a perfect title. I really do. I really like it.
Thank you.
Okay, here's where I come up with my weird question. If you were running a teen hotline,
mm-hmm.
and some teen called you in the middle of the night and said, my parents are going to kill me if I come out. If I don't come out, I'm going to kill myself. What would you say?
Oh, gosh. Tough question, Nate. I don't know if I'm qualified to even answer. I'm not a social worker or a psychologist. I think everyone's situation is so unique. So I think, coming out is a great, viable option for a lot of teens, and for others it's not. I think the most important thing is reaching a place where you can be happy with yourself and kind of at peace with yourself and get by. That's sort of what I did. I realized, I know it sounds weird to people who are younger now, but I realized I was gay when I was, 21, which, may seem old nowadays. Back then, maybe not so old. But in many ways, I really realized I was gay much earlier, but it was that conscious and finally admitting it. And I was in college, and right. I was in a fraternity, and I had a lot of friends, and I finally felt really kind of accepted and popular maybe for the first time in my life ever. And I didn't want anything to jeopardize that. But I had a kind of weird inner peace that I finally admitted to myself. And I was able to get through, the rest of college without coming out. And once I, left college, I did come out, and that felt even better. It's a hard thing to kind of lie and live a secret life. But, sometimes people have circumstances where it's not really the smartest idea to come out. And I think there are a lot of I think it's brave when kids do, no matter what the circumstances. But I think it's always sort of an individual decision. And I think right. I would tell that kid, whatever will keep you happy, whatever will keep you alive, and whatever will keep you sane, that's the decision you should make.
Right. Well, I want you to know that I'm a full-time volunteer in the gay community, and one of my jobs is Stonewall National Museum and Library, Stonewall National Museum and Archives, which has the world's largest gay and lesbian library that's lending. We put in some requests for your book, some of the other books, and I go to the high schools a couple, three times a year with my bag of books, and I give them out to the teachers, who then can give them out to the students, and I talk to the students. I'm cleared to go into the school districts, which is a whole other craziness down here, but don't even ask. Anyway, but I am cleared to go into the school district, which is
great. It sounds like you do a great thing. So
anyway, I was in a school district last week, and it was a school that had like a junior high and a high school together, and there were 13-year-olds at the Gay Straight Alliance that were out. And
wow!
I know, and I'm
going. Great, I think.
I started crying. I mean, I totally started crying. And I had three copies of your book. Now, how we get your book is we get them from the publishers, but we put in these little angel lists in the gay papers down here, and people buy us the books and donate them, and then I take them to the schools. We have your book in the library, but a few months ago, there were about 8 or 10 books that I keep requesting for, and people go out and buy them, or they get them on, wherever they get them, in Amazon, and then they bring them in. We give them the tax deduction, and then we have fun with them. And we distribute them we have 21 high schools, and more than half of them in our county have gay straight alliances. And there's almost 400,000 teenagers in the state of Florida that are exposed to gay straight alliances that have a network of either gay and lesbian community centers, organizations like Equality Florida, in Broward County, it's the Stonewall Library. Well, that hopefully Glesson takes care of that in the other cities. So the word's getting out, and it's just amazing. It's just absolutely amazing. I don't even you know that It Gets Better thing with Dan Savage?
Mm-hmm.
You've heard of that, right? The It Gets Better YouTube thing?
Yeah.
You know, I read that, and after reading your book and what you just said about finding that inner peace, I don't really think it gets that much better. I just think you get stronger.
Exactly. I mean, I think that program is great. I think, you know, as one of my friends wrote a recent essay, he says it gets better-ish. A great young adult writer himself, Patrick Ryan, he wrote an essay, and it gets better-ish. It never gets perfect, right. And, you know, I don't know if life gets perfect for anyone, gay or straight. So you're always going to have people you have to deal with in life who, you know, frankly suck.
Right.
You know, you get out of high school, you go to college, and then, you know, the great thing about getting older, I've tried to tell some, you know, teens that I have exposure to, is the great thing about being older is you sometimes get to choose more who you surround yourself with. You know, you don't really have that option when you're younger. But as you get older, you kind of are able to surround yourself by people you want to be around. So in that sense, it does get better.
Right. But I think you also get stronger. I think you just get stronger in your own self-esteem. Now, the kids that don't get stronger are the ones that need the help. You have to reach out to them.
Right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that what you're doing down there sounds great, and I really thank you for getting the books out there and
it's amazing.
And all that.
Well, you know, just like, you know, when I was 10 or 11, I think that's when I first realized there's something different and I had an attraction to men. This is 1960 or 61. I went to the library, and this is how I am giving back by building up a gay and lesbian library, is that I went back and went to the library, and all I found were books on homosexuality, were deviants and degenerates and a sick.
Oh, gosh.
Well, that was what it was, because until 1972 or 73, when the American Psychiatric Association said it wasn't something that can be fixed. You know, that's all we had. You know, and then of course there was nothing there was no internet, and so this is the only thing I had with the books that were telling me that I was a deviant. So I kind of went back in the closet, and it wasn't very comfortable.
It's so much better. I mean, it gets better, and it. To use another cheesy expression, the Whitney Houston song, the children are our future. But, you know, kids nowadays are a lot more open-minded and accepting, and I think that's one of the key things that when you're gay, it's just the more people you know who know you and like you realize that a gay person is not some awful other. And I think more and more that it's out in the open and accepted. It's just, you know, it's slowly but surely, you know, this breed of old, bigoted, hateful people are dying out, thankfully.
Right, exactly.
You know.
I don't think we're changing the old people's minds. I think it's just death and more people getting older, the younger crowd, even in the conservative movement.
And there are some old people, I think, who are coming around. But, you know, some people are just not going to change their opinions about gays, about people of other races, about all kinds of things. So that's just sad truth. So I think we're raising, you know, a much better generation. I think it's going to get better and better and better. And then people are going to look back and wonder why there was never why gay marriage was an issue, why a lot of these things were an issue. And it's kind of going to lap. I mean, the whole, you know, the experience of African Americans in this country, it doesn't mean that, you know, racism is abolished, but the things that happened in the 60s, people can't really fathom happening.
Right.
So, you know, one day we'll be at that same place, I would think.
Right. I'm a young gay man. I'm an old gay man. I'm sorry. I'm an old gay man who remembers colored-only drinking fountains because those didn't go away until I was, you know, an older, you know, after 1955, 56, and I was 6 or 7 years old. I remember going to because I couldn't read. I went to the wrong drinking fountain, and my mother pulled me away. And so I know. Well, I mean, but that was common with people my age if they remember it. But I was never, you know. I couldn't read, you know, was able to read, I remember being pulled away. It was one of my early experiences. And of course, today, I might as well be a Civil War reenactor when I speak about that.
It does seem like it was 100 years ago, and it's really not that, you know, not that far off. But things have changed drastically.
They have changed drastically, but there's a long we have a long way to go. There's a lot of people who
There's always a long way to go. I mean,
right.
It's never perfect, and even growing up in the 80s and 90s, even the 90s,
right.
State of being gay is it's so much better now, and
right. Yeah, I live in Fort Lauderdale where it's incredibly, it's like one out of three people are gay, we don't know how it would. It just seems like one day there's no straight people around. But anyway, somebody, not a straight person, once told me, says, being gay today is kind of like being Swedish.
What does that mean? Boring? No.
No. Like, kind of a little bit odd.
Gay people have better health care.
Right. It's like being Swedish. You're just like another little, foreign nationality. We love you, but, you're a little different, but we.
Right.
So it's kind of like, I looked at her and she was like a Latina woman, and I went, oh, okay. And then I started thinking, and it was kind of a compliment because it made them like, you're from Sweden, you're like a little strange, but you're there, But
right.
It was kind of weird, but that's
funny.
But I mean, that's a strange thing that we've gotten to that point in gay history where they're just trying to figure out what to say nice to you, and it comes out so funny. But all right, so what's your next project? You have to be writing more. I know you're an editor. You work in the literary field, so you've got.
I do publicity actually for a company in New York. So I'm in the book publishing world, but I'm not an editor. I do publicity, and I'm really happy I'm not an editor. That's too draining mentally to also be a writer. Some people do it, but I couldn't do it.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But I am working on the second novel. It's been sort of a long road. It's been I think a lot of writers go through this. Not every writer, but I think a lot of writers go through this with their second book. It's just, it's tough. You think you finish a book and it's going to be easy, and it's so not easy. But
huh.
I've turned in a draft in November or October of last year. My editor gave me edits. I'm doing another draft right now.
Uh-huh.
So hopefully it'll come out next year. I'm back working on it, and I must say it's a lot of fun. I mean, it reminds me how much I love writing, and I love what I'm able to do. I mean, it's hard. I still have a lot of work ahead of me. But yeah, so my next book, hopefully next year or early 2013.
And is it going to be teenable again? Or are we going in a different genre, or are we?
It's going to be young adult.
Good, you like that.
A young adult again, older teenagers. It's about a young boy who moves to Texas with his parents, and he's moved around a lot in his life, and. It's set in Austin, where I lived for 7 years, and it's one of my favorite places in the world. It's like a diamond in the rough of Texas.
Yeah.
So it's been fun mentally going back to Austin, where I used to live. And so it's set in Texas, not Alabama, but it's still about sensitive teenage boys and girls.
Wow, very good, very cool. Yeah, I love Austin. My partner's from Austin. He moved here for me.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it must be something here, but yeah. So we've
it's
been,
a great place.
I love it. Yeah, he has a daughter there, and being older, my partner and I both were married and have children. Came out later in life.
Oh wow!
I know. So we're that old story. We don't have this young thing, but we live in I do live in a bubble. My kids, our kids all get along, and everyone loves everybody. And
great.
So it's another young adult novel, but the kids are older, so they're different problems, right?
They're about the same age as Alex and James, 16, 17, 18.
Uh-huh.
But a whole set of different problems, I would like to think. It's not about brothers. It's about, I think I'm still figuring out what it's about. That's the fun part of revising.
See, okay, so we'll press you for details.
A little love element in it. There's a little love element. It's about friendship and relationships and all that stuff.
Well, you have to have the love and relationships and angst.
Oh, in a teen novel, it's got to drip angst. About being a teenager, it's angst. I love that time of life. Even though I myself was sort of miserable as a teenager, I love going back there. People think I'm nuts. Like, why would you want to go back there mentally? But I just think there's something so wonderful about it. I don't know if that sounds kind of like I'm romanticizing the era, but it's just, It's fun to go back to that dramatic time of your life when everything seems so highly charged.
Do you think you're rewriting history for yourself when you do that?
You know, it's funny. There was a writer said that he writes to kind of make his wishes come true. I wouldn't say I necessarily do that, but I think there is sort of something to be said about that. You know, I didn't have a Nathan mm-hmm. when I was in high school. I didn't, and in the novel I'm writing now, there, you know, a character has some really great friends, and I to be honest, I didn't have
right.
too many really great friends in high school. So I'm kind of creating these worlds for my characters that are tough and hard, but I'm giving them a little more hope and light than I think I had. Uh-huh. So in a way, I guess, yeah, I'm sort of rewriting history.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's a good therapy, and we're all enjoying the fruits of it. So great.
Well, thank you.
Are you familiar with Brian Ketcher's book, Almost Perfect?
Yes, I listened to your interview with him a few weeks ago, and okay. I know his work. We're published by the same company, and okay. so we don't have the same editor, but I know his editor, and I haven't read his books, but they're both on my, you know, very big to-be-read shelf, so.
Well, I've started reading, like, the whole genre, Alex Sanchez, you, I mean, it's incredible. I've turned into, like, the teen novel expert of my friend. My friends think I'm nuts, because that's like, what are you reading?
No, you're...
I said, I'm really getting into these stories. I really want to know what happens, you know?
You're not alone. I mean, I think there, and especially in the gay novel world, I find that there's so many great young adult gay novels, and wow. I like to read them too, even though me reading them is also sort of part of my,
right.
you know, I'm reading in my field. But even before that, I loved reading those stories because there's something kind of almost
right.
A lot of them are just better than a lot of the adult novels. I don't want to read about these depressing adult problems. I want to read about kind of fun teenage lives.
I don't want to read about meth, and I don't want to read about, you know, getting AIDS. I just want to read about good stuff. You know, talk to me, look at me. You know, maybe I'm reliving my childhood, you know, or rewriting my history that wasn't there either. I mean, I, you know, never had a boyfriend in high school, or, you know, I never
yeah.
had, you know, I had crushes, but I could never verbalize it, you know.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of people, not just gay, are reading the young adult genre. I think it's very vibrant, and a lot of great writing is being done in that field. So I'm really proud and lucky to be a part of it.
Right, right. You're maybe you'll start like a whole genre of romance novels.
Oh, I don't know. I think there already is.
Yeah,
there's a lot of male-on-male romance novels being written.
Right,
by women, actually, a lot of them.
Women. And there's a Scott Pomfret has a series called Bromance novels, but they're a little lustier. They're like almost soft porn. So I mean, and that's
yeah. I'm gonna aim a little higher, but not to denigrate romance novels. But.
No. But I mean, more like.
Don't probably get me in trouble. Just what I said. So
no, I know
shut
Scott
up.
Pomfret's gonna he does listen to this because he's emailed me before. He's gonna get mad. He's coming on the show for in a few weeks, but that's okay. Are you familiar with his at all? Scott.
And then you're the one who called it soft porn. I didn't, so he'll
I know,
be mad at you.
I soft porn to him. I called it soft porn to him, and you said you're going to aim a little higher. That's okay. No, we're fine. He's cool.
I can't write soft porn for teenagers anyway, so I
never
couldn't
get it
if I tried.
Cool. Anyway, we're all done here. So any last thoughts before we sign off?
Oh, I don't know. Thanks for having me on the show, and to all any listeners out there, just keep reading and, you know, keep listening to your wonderful show, and thanks for doing what you do.
Okay, one last plug for you. It's martinwilsonwrites.com. That is Martin's.
Correct.
Website. I'm going to do your thing for you. Martin Wilson Writes, WRITES.com, and that's where you'll be able to find out when the next book is coming out. You'll be able to contact Martin, and that's it. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I had a great time. And
thank you, Nate. I had a great time as well. Thanks so much.
Good night. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Okay, good night.